morning, good afternoon, and good night. And welcome to T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. The most fun you'll ever listen to while you're folding your clothes. Now let's get this straight. This is not your average podcast. T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio is super fun, super crazy. It's pretty much an in-your-face conversation. That's the good thing about us. We don't do interviews. We do conversations. All of my guests, all of my co-hosts, we chill. We drink, we play games, we have the song of the week, we have the creative curse word of the week, as long as you're having fun as our guests. Speaking of guests, each week I'm going to go through my whole contact list and dive headfirst into the world of music, gaming, exotic cars, tech, strippers probably, doctors probably strippers that are only stripping so they can pay for tuition to become a doctor. You never know. My wife is a certified bartender. She'll make you a drink while you're here. We'll get you drunk and make you play VR after. It's a lot going on, but that's what it's all about over here at T-Pain's Nappy Boy Radio Podcast. See you soon, baby!
Hey everybody, this is Shift and Stare, and I've got big news. It's breaking as we speak, and I'm going to bring Matt into the fold on this because he already knows. The automotive world is officially back open because Matt and I went last week to the Barrett Jackson auction in Las Vegas, and it was kicking ass and taking names. And I'm going to tell you about the vehicle that I drove over there, and Matt is going to tell you the big news about a launch that was in Vegas. So
that's right.
It's all happening today on Shift and Steer. But first, he's going to tell you about who helps us do this every week.
Yeah, thanks to our friends at Geico. You know, you guys can, you either own your home or you rent your home. And we know it can be a lot of hard work, but you know, it's easy. It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. That's geico.com. And of course, our friends over at Meguiar's. We saw the guys at Meguiar's.
We did. They were there
last weekend as well. You know, over the last few years, Meguiar's has launched the next generation of protective products specifically geared toward DIYers like you guys. They have their hybrid ceramic line of products. You've heard us talk about it before. They have their spray wax, which is in the bright blue bottle. It's got that advanced SiO2 hybrid technology, delivers great ceramic wax protection and durability beyond traditional wax. They also have their hybrid ceramic liquid wax. This is a long-lasting ceramic protection in an easy-to-use liquid wax. And of course, their spray detailer. This is a great one. Very easy to use. Boost that shine in between the full wax applications. You know, removes dust, fingerprints, bird droppings, pretty much anything. Super easy to use. And then this new product that they have, it's the hybrid ceramic wash and wax. It's in the bright orange bottle. It's a unique two liquid system in one bucket. It washes and protects all at the same time. Very, very cool stuff. So hybrid, the hybrid ceramic solution, Meguiar's has one for everyone. It's ceramic made easy. It's Meguiar's.
Shift and Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjoy, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, thanks to those guys for supporting Shift and Steer. Every week, in and out, it's great. Hey, let's get right into it, man, because I was excited to finally go somewhere, Matt. Didn't have to wear a mask. Didn't have somebody pointing at me going, "Hey, you got a mask?" And and be around a bunch of car people, see a bunch of great stuff. And that was Las Vegas for the Barrett Jackson auction. And you know, Matt, that it was a balmy 114 degrees.
Oh my God, that was at night. It must have been 117, 118 at during the day. My God.
I looked at when we were going past Baker on the screen on my car. It said that Death Valley was 125. I'm like, whoa,
It was like walking with a hairdryer on your face. And that's when the sun was blocked by the cloud cover. I want to talk about what I drove, what you drove. I want to talk about the event, but Barrett Jackson, man, I believe it was the first public event at the newly built West Hall at the Las Vegas Convention Center. It's a gorgeous building. That whole lobby area kind of looks like a big airport terminal.
And it's huge. It's
got more than one room. It's got a bunch of meeting rooms, but as far as the large area where you can hold a big event like this, that room was 600,000 square feet. And they had it packed with probably 250, 300 cars, something like that, on display. It was nice that the entire auction was indoors because of the weather that you're talking about.
We walked out into
some
vendor
displays and a few things.
Staging lanes were outside, Matt, but you could walk out, and I saw the funniest thing because there's a front entrance and a back entrance. I don't know if you knew that. And there were people that had pulled chairs up to the inside lobby because the way the staging lanes were, they were situated right in front of all the windows of that lobby in the back. And they were like kicked back there watching the cars come up in the air conditioned comfort of the convention lobby. And it was great. The layout worked really well. It flowed really, really well.
So we've got, if you're interested, we've got a few of the statistics, which we always love. Barrett Jackson Las Vegas auction does $48 million in sales. The prices of cars were just fantastic. It really is a seller's market right now, it seems like.
Oh my God.
Some of the notable pieces up there, of course, were...
Let me throw one out. Can I throw one out right away? Because this one blew me away. You guys know that I owned a Grand National Buick, okay? Had one. I sold it about 10 years back, was it? Way before the market exploded. But the one that was there was touted as the lowest mileage example of a GNX. Now, this was a...
That's the good one.
Yeah, an 87. Now, there was, right behind it, a Grand National Buick. Then there was a GNX. The GNX was, I think, 8.7 miles showing on the odometer. I mean, this thing's been a trailer queen, a warehouse queen its entire life. Now, before I tell you how much this one went for, which it still had the plastic on the seats, it still had the window sticker, it had everything the dealer didn't remove. But before I tell you, there were only 547 examples of these made. Number 547 sold in 2017 for $220,000, and it was the... car to have because it was the last one off.
And that's a lot of money for that car.
Well, let me just tell you, this one there blew it away when it hammered down at $275,000.
Wow.
And when we were watching that, Matt, I mean, it was like it kept going. It kind of stalled for a little bit, and then it went, and then it went more, and then it went more. And when it hammered for $275,000, I went, that's a record price. No, I said, damn, that is crazy. That is just, but it's an example, wouldn't you say, of where the collector car market is right now? Because prices across the board were just spectacular. And one of the things that I noticed was that Nuts and Bolts Restored Numbers Match in Muscle Cars have been a little soft in the past few years, and it's been all about the pro touring cars. It all turned around here. Nuts and Bolts, Camaros, and Chevelles were bringing top dollar again.
They were bringing good money. Here's a thought. Let me ask you this. Get your thoughts on this. You have a Grand National GNX like that. It's an 8 miles on the odometer, or the Mustang Cobra from a couple years ago. It had like, I don't know, 33 miles on it or something, whatever it was, right? And they were getting record numbers. Is it fair? I don't know that they're doing this. I'm just saying, if you had an 8 mile or 10 mile or 100 mile car, is it fair to unplug the Speedo to push the car around to auctions and stuff like this, as long as you're not driving it, you're not firing up the engine and driving it. Is it fair to do that to, so these are drivable miles, or does pushing it over the life of the vehicle, if it's been pushed for maintenance and things like that, is it fair? Do you have to push it a mile and have 9 miles on the odometer or not? And then I guess the second part of that question is, if you maintain the car and you fire it up a couple of times a year to get it up to temperature and don't drive it, are you adding hours to the engine like a boat? You know, what are your thoughts on the reality of miles and hours on a car?
I'll tell you my thought on your first question. I would say don't ever unhook the odometer. Number one is because the second you do, there's questions that arise. Well, did they actually drive it then also? And did they, you know, the other reason is because maybe you don't have the motor running, but is there more wear and tear on that car? Because guys were pushing on the spoiler, guys were pushing on the fenders, and the wheel bearings were still rolling, the brakes were still being used. And I would say absolutely not. And the second part of the question is, I would actually rather, if I was looking at a GNX, I would rather own a GNX that was completely original, just absolutely perfect, but maybe had 500 to 1,000 miles on it, than one with 8 miles. Because you hit it on the head. One with 8 miles, Matt, it's going to have problems. You're never going to be able to drive it. My Baldwin Motion Vega, it's not a low miles car, 20,000, 22,000 miles. But still, it's one of those where it's to the value where you don't want to drive it, you know, because it's like, anything happens to it, it's irreplaceable. Don't you want to have a car that, come on, you could at least drive around the block or pull it out, at least go to the whatever show, pull it out of your trailer and drive it down the block or across the fairgrounds?
Yeah.
You really want to have it, you know, on Go-Jacks?
I agree with that. I think, well, to your point, as soon as you crack that bolt on the odometer, like the transmission gear, you bust that thread lock off or whatever, I think then you just open yourself up to an argument. Someone down the line is going to say you altered the one thing that creates value for that car. So, and I would also say 8 miles on the GNX or 12 miles on that GNX wouldn't have changed the price at all.
No,
it wouldn't have changed the price. And how often are you going to push it around? And Jay Leno, who we love, has been quoted as saying that he loves to drive his car. So he will oftentimes drive them down and restore them back up. And I always kind of liked that mentality of it. If it hurts the value of the car a little bit, is it worth the trade-off and the enjoyment he got out of that car over the life of his ownership? And for me, I do like that. You know, even Adam Carolla's collection, he had a bunch of very low miles street cars. And we kind of got rid of the street cars for that reason. And he just got the racing cars. And the racing cars, we're in a world with vintage racing where you can actually create more value by bringing those cars to events like Goodwood and Monterey and showing them off and racing them again. Now it's starting to become a bullet point, a valuable bullet point in car auctions like Gooding and Monterey or Gooding and RM going, this did compete at Goodwood, 2016, or it competed at Monterey, or, like that is creating value. So I'm kind of with you on that.
Well, we kind of, you get your mind thinking, and one of the things that is one of the advantages of a pro touring car or a modified car or a hot rod, because back in my days with Boyd, we would have customers that would drive the wheels off those cars. They would come back, and the anodized parts would all be pitted up and faded, and there'd be stone chips, and they'd say, blow it apart and redo it. But you know what? They enjoyed it, and then they put it back. Or the guys that we've known and seen, like Ring Brothers and things like mm-hmm. that go for a competition. The car's brought in, it's got, you know, covers on the tires. But then as soon as they win or lose that competition, the customer takes it and drives it on Power Tour or something like that.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, what it's about. Because, I like that.
So let's talk about some of these cars, right? You mentioned some of the custom cars, the hot rods, the pro touring cars. So let's just jump right to the 1970 Chevy Camaro, the Grinch, built. Yeah. It's the green one by Ring Brothers. Beautiful car, did a great job on it. $385,000 for this car at Barrett Jackson. I mean, when Ring Brother cars were getting $250,000 at Barrett Jackson years ago, they couldn't have been any happier, because there was a day where, you know, you'd give Chip Foose $500,000 and then they would sell at Barrett Jackson for $80,000.
Right.
No market at all for these custom cars, right? And now they're really starting to get up there. And this is kind of an interesting thing, because you're talking about a one-off car. But when you start to get into things like Singer Porsches and even Icon Broncos, and you know there's a 2 or 3 waiting list to go get one of those things, finding one at an auction like this, they become pretty valuable. If you want an Icon Bronco today, you would have bought the one that was at Barrett Jackson. Right? Because you got to wait 2 years to get one from Jonathan Ward.
Yeah, you don't have the advantage of choosing the color, choosing the leather, doing all that, but you get to jump in it and drive it. And in that case with the Grinch, somebody got it at a bargain, because even at that price, it was less than it would have cost to have the Ring Brothers build it.
Yeah. Okay, so some of the other cars were the 2015 McLaren P1. This was owned by Deadmau5, the DJ. 1.567 500. We call it 1.6 million for that, which is a great sale. There was a Mercedes-Benz 300 SL Roadster, the 57. It's not the Gullwing, of course. It's the Roadster. The market on those is $1 million. It sold for $1 million. There wasn't anything out of the ordinary for that, but that's pretty much what we expected. You know, a modern day Ford GT, a 2019 Ford GT, $1 million. I think that's about the going rate, right? It was $1,023,000.
Well, now wait a minute. What did it hammer for?
Well, the all in price was $1,023,000.
Okay, that same car sold for $1 million hammer plus the at Scottsdale.
So $1.1 million.
Yes.
So somebody lost $77,000.
No, let's say they had $70,000 worth of enjoyment if they drove that car. But it was the guy who had sold his entire collection of cars at Scottsdale. Then he turned around and bought that one.
Okay.
And he was up in the skybox by us in Scottsdale. That's why I knew that. And the reason I knew is because it had that beautiful car trailer that it came with.
Yes.
And, and it was... it was back with the car again. So,
I was going to say, maybe he made out okay if he kept the trailer.
No, he sold the trailer with the car. So,
here's an interesting car. Two cars I want to get to. Of course, the Fast and Furious Supra I want to talk about.
And let me guess. Well, wait a minute. Just to talk about the Cobra, the Shelby Cobra.
Actually, no, I was going to say the 66 Ford Mustang GT convertible. No, the black one. This is the K-code convertible, but it was Henry Ford II's personal car. It was the gorgeous black 66 Mustang, and it is a GT K-code. It was a real K-code car. It was very, very nice. Obviously, all stock, all original. I assume restored. I don't know for sure. But... I mean, what's the going market of a K-code convertible clean? 60,000?
What year was it again?
66. 67? Yeah. Yeah.
66. Gen
66.
K-code convertible. Well, I don't know now. I know a few years back, you know, they were going for really good money and they got a little soft, but what did it go for? What was the hammer on it?
So the all-in price, so the hammer's 300,000. So it's $330,000 all in. And it does show you that having some provenance, like Henry Ford II's personal car, did contribute quite a bit to
gave it about $100,000 in provenance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty significant. And then, of course, the Toyota Supra, the Fast and Furious movie car. It was actually in the first movie and the second movie. I believe in the second one, it was gold. And then whoever had the car restored it back to the original Fast and Furious 1, the very famous car that Paul Walker drove in that. $550,000. It was a $500,000 hammer price, $50,000 all in. You know, a really nice Toyota Supra Turbo these days are floating around that $80,000 to $100,000 range. Now you're talking about some movie history and some Paul Walker history, which is not insignificant. Now, Paul Walker stuff might start to show up to be pretty collectible. Likeable guy, huge franchise, but doesn't have like a racing history like, you know, like a Paul Newman or even a Steve McQueen or, you know, some of these other actors. I would even argue somewhere down the line, 40, 50 years from now, Patrick Dempsey stuff is going to be valuable, you know, some things like that.
This is what I call a celebrity car. You know, it's not a celebrity's car, but a celebrity car. You know, that's kind of what it is.
It is a unique collectible piece. I mean, certainly a franchise that's going to turn out 10 movies, not including the spinoffs. Fast and Furious 9 is coming out right now, but they've said they're doing 10, and that's the finale. That was the plan, 10, which they put like 4 movies ago. They said they were going to do 10.
Now then they're going to do a Fast movie and then a Furious movie, and then they're going to do a Furious and a Fast movie.
Yeah, well, there's definitely the Hobbs and Shaw spinoff franchise, and they're talking about, you know, some other spinoff franchises of it. But it's a cool car. It's a cool piece. It's got an iconic look to it. It's interesting because you look at the graphics and stuff of that car in that movie, and you just thought it was cheesy. And even now, today, you kind of think so. But it made it so recognizable.
It did. You know, was that what, like a Silver Surfer or whatever you call it on the side, but it did. You knew it right away. You know, it stuck out. It wasn't a two-tone paint job. It wasn't just stripes. It was just that, you know, that airbrush graphic on the side.
Yeah. And I think that definitely creates something special for this car. Honestly, I didn't think it was going to pull this kind of money. And then, you know, then the buzz around the Fast and Furious car started happening just before, you know, when I started looking online, going, what could this go for? And I reached out to some friends that have a few Fast and Furious cars, and they said 500 grand. And they're right on the money. They're like, we feel like it's going to be 500 grand. They said it could be wild, anywhere from 250 to $1 million. But they were like, let's just call it 500 grand. And that's where it hammered at. Amazing.
Isn't there a Skyline GTR that he owned? A white one or something?
And I think he owned two of those. I can't say for sure. I forgot what he told me, what Paul Walker told me. But I think he had two. And he had a number of other really cool cars. He had two, like, BMW E36 CSL lightweight cars.
Right.
He had one with very little miles, like you talked about, collectible. But then he had another one that he did drive more. Yeah.
You know what that's akin to? A woman who has costume jewelry. The good, real stuff stays at home, and you take out the other stuff to party. So if something happens, hey, you know, you write it off.
Yeah.
So
anyway, I thought it was a fantastic event.
How about that? Okay, so there was that 289 Cobra that came across the board, and Aaron Shelby wrote up in it, all original, and it was the wires. It was it just had that iconic 289 look, and it was a late entry 65 Cobra, and $825,000 was the hammer on it.
Yeah. So I mean, $907,500 all in, you know, but I do kind of like, as much as I love the 427s, you know, the 289 body style, kind of the slab side body style of it is kind of cool. This was an interesting car. It was very well equipped when it was purchased originally, you know, with, you know, the upgraded tires, and it came with the hard top, and, you know, it had the side curtains and the chrome wire wheels and the radio antenna and the dual carbs. And by the way, back then, those options, I think the car was $5,195.
Which was a fortune, man.
$5,200. It came with the upgraded tires was $280. Antifreeze, for some reason, that was an option for $3.55. The hardtop was $169. The chrome wheels, $105. The dual carbs, $194.50. So the total price with all the options back then was $6,360.
Do you know how much money that was in 1965? I mean, that's
a good question. So let's see.
You could buy a house for $14,000 on average. So look at it that way. That's probably in $65 with inflation and dollar. Are you looking it up on the internet?
Yeah, I'm going to calculate.
I'm going to tell you what I guess it's going to be. $125,000.
I'm trying to find like a calculator. 1965.
This is, I mean, you know, when you figure that a house in 65 was like, I think the average price was $13,000 to $14,000, and you know, it's you know, and that thing was really optional. Wasn't it dropped off of a crane or something?
What did I say the total was? Like
$6,100, I believe.
$6,100?
Yeah.
Maybe it was 61 or 63. I don't know. Let me see.
A word from our friends at Geico. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Not as much as you would have thought. $6,100 in 1965 is $52,129.
Okay, I thought three times as much. You're right.
Yeah, but that would have been 50 something thousand, 51, 53. I forgot what the total price was, but like, yeah, interesting. That's if you think about it, that's a lot of money to spend on a car. Even today, spending $53,000 on a car is, I mean, I want to say Edmunds told me that the average price of a car right now is like $40,000 or $42,000, somewhere in the low 40s.
Which, I mean, you know, we've talked about that on the show. They've just been skyrocketing. Okay, so there were so many notable cars that crossed the block. I mean, there was that Fastback Mustang. I don't have the actual numbers in front of me, but I believe it was kind of a customized, you know, had Carroll Shelby's signature on the dash. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it went for around $136,000 hammer price. And, you know, it was a little bit more of a kind of a semi-pro touring car, but not super, super high end, just very well appointed and like that, which was a really good solid price. But the did you see the 67 Z28 Camaro that went across?
I did see that car. I didn't see it go across the block, but I saw the car.
So it was really nice. They're really rare cars that at one time really commanded a lot of value. And they'd gone a little soft because, like we talked about with original cars. But that one kind of was where I opened my eyes and said, look at that. It's an all original muscle car. and it went. I do not have the exact price because I don't have the results pulled up in front of me, but I believe it was in the 200,000 range.
Yeah,
220, which was great to see because we want to see those cars going for value. Because I like my you know factory muscle cars. Let's talk about something that's a little bit unusual. Now, Matt, you know, I've been putting up on my social media and I've talked about it, that I've gotten into this NFT world, of course, cryptocurrency, but yeah. NFT, non-fungible tokens. And I've taken some of my photography and started creating it on the blockchain. And I'm looking towards putting some of those up there. I have one listed right now. I've got more I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But Barrett Jackson announced they were going to be the first collector car auction to offer NFT artwork, which is basically a digital trading card. And in their case, the winner got a short video, and they took the number one cars from Scottsdale, the number one Hummer, the number one electric Ford truck, I believe it was. But those four vehicles, and they created a video, an electronic card, and an actual printed piece. Well, those four pieces of art did pretty well, considering this is a market that I feel isn't really up on that. I mean, you know, let's be honest with you.
I was so confused as to exactly what it was, but the NFT for the Mustang Mach 1 sold for
$30,000.
$30,000. Like, you don't even get anything? Like, what do you get?
No, what you get
nothing.
Well, no, you now own that digital code on the blockchain. And what that is, Matt, is it's like a piece of artwork. And so there are now boards. You know, they look like flat screen TVs. So if you want to display it in your office or in your business or so, you know, in this case, let's say it was a car dealership that bought it, you know, a Ford dealer, he can have yeah. that, and he forever owns that segment of video, that photo, and he can display it. Now, what's interesting about NFT art is that there is becoming an exchangeable market. What I want to see is, as this progresses, and I know Barrett Jackson is already talking about doing more, but will we see someday these original four come back in 10 years and be worth more money? That's what I want to see happens, you know, because is it going to be a yeah. collectible market of their own? We'll see. It's all yet to know. But right now, good for Barrett Jackson for stepping out there. And you know, trying it out. $67,000 in sales for those four pieces of art, and it only took him about 12 minutes to do it. So that was pretty cool.
It was weird and it was different, and I guess it was successful for them, which is good. One other thing I wanted to mention was, of course, Barrett Jackson, also well known for their charity auctions. That, by the way, when you bid on one of these charity cars, you cut the check directly to the charity. It doesn't go through Barrett Jackson. Barrett Jackson doesn't make any money on the deal. They've always been very good about that. If you, you know, do Ronald McDonald House or something, you write the check to them. You get your tax benefit, whatever the deal is with that particular nonprofit. They raised an additional $775,000 for charity at the Las Vegas through auction cars. And to date so far, Barrett Jackson, over its lifetime, coming up on 50 years, by the way, has raised $133 million for charity.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's impressive.
It really is.
That's an impressive amount of money.
And it is a perfect room for that. You have all these individuals with high net worth who love vehicles and need tax breaks. And I don't mean to boil it down to that. I'm not trying to be funny, but that's why you get these high dollars, because number one, they can donate to a very worthy cause, something that they can support, get a vehicle, and get a tax break. So it's a win-win for everybody. And in some cases, we've seen that these vehicles get re-donated back so that they can sell them again. And that's incredible.
Yeah, I thought it's good. It's impressive. They put together a good program, and they've attracted the best cars. They usually get the VIN number one of a lot of cars. We've seen that year over year over year, Mustangs and GM and you know, Ford products and all kinds of stuff. They get the VIN number
Absolutely.
One. You get the chance to, you know, to build the car even the way you want. It's a fun process if you can afford it. So anyway, good event.
How'd you get there?
Out of time. Yeah, you know, I'll just do this one kind of quickly, but I drove out, you know, as you mentioned, we launched a hard seltzer out there.
I didn't mention
Bravago.
Well,
you said it was a launch, and we had mentioned Bravago. Bravago is our new bold seltzer. It's a hard seltzer that we launched at Barrett Jackson. It's technically not even really available yet. It's coming soon. We're going to be able to sell it online. But we wanted to use Barrett Jackson as a launch event. And I got to tell you guys, for everybody that went out to Barrett Jackson, thank you for that. It was an overwhelmingly positive response. The amount of product that was moved exceeded our expectations. People seemed to really like it. People that were grabbing, we had three flavors. People that were ordering one flavor were going back and buying the second and the third. And just a very, very good response overall. So I appreciate that. If you guys are interested, go to drinkbravago.com. It's Bravago, drinkbravago.com. And just sign up, just put your email and zip code. We'll keep you on the list for our pre-launch and more information. We're just getting an email and the zip code, because the zip code helps us determine where we need to focus our efforts for retail sales, right? So I appreciate that, but a great event. But because we were launching the event, I needed to drive out there instead of fly and bring some banners and some displays. And I've really been looking forward to two vehicles. One, I was looking for the Kia Telluride, which is a very popular SUV, getting very, very high
it
reviews.
It is. See them everywhere.
It's on the list to drive, but I wasn't able to get it in time. So I got the Genesis GV80, which is in the same family. It's their luxury brand. Unfortunately, for whatever good or bad, you may have heard about it because this is the vehicle that Tiger Woods was driving when he had his accident a little while back. And that got a lot of press. But that being said, it's actually a beautiful SUV. The diamond stitch interior, the touchscreen, the way it works. I mean, you really kind of lean into this thing and you really get kind of notes of Bentley going on. You kind of feel that way. Bentley and even like Lincoln Black Label, they're doing a good job. It had the upgraded engine, the 3.5 liter V6 turbo, I believe. It ran great. I think we averaged about 19 miles per gallon. It was just it's a really nice, good looking vehicle. I'm not sure what the resale is on these. I think they take a little bit of a hit. It might be a nice vehicle to lease now and get the warranty and drive it new, or to purchase a lease return in a couple of years. Maybe the price drops quite a bit, but it was really nice. I'm trying to find out exactly what these things cost, but yeah. So the GV80 actually starts at 48.9. So, you know, it starts at $50,000. And I think the one we drove had all of the options. So it's probably, we had the 3.5 liter advanced plus the 3.5 liter is 60 grand. There's a $65,000 version, the trim level. We probably had a few options on top of that. I think the prestige is 70,000. But anyway, between 50 and maybe $75,000 is where the range is on this thing. And it was nice. I was actually very impressed. There was a couple little tiny things you can nitpick. There's one of the dials for the different modes that felt a little cheap to me. And on the there's a touch screen on the dash with a controller on the center console. So you can touch screen or use the controller. And I noticed a few times when I hit the touch screen, like Sirius XM or Apple CarPlay, when I hit the button, it didn't do anything. But when I toggled to it with the controller and hit the button, then it did do something. So not always hitting the touchscreen was it responsive. Could be just a little software flaw, but I think it was gorgeous.
Cool. What color was it?
It's a kind of a silver, almost like a nickel, right? It had like a little bit of a metallic, which maybe hints of kind of nickel, like it has a little touch of gold in it. It was a beautiful color. And then the interior was like tan seats, but all of the accents, dash and door panels and stuff was a dark blue leather. It was really pretty. It was blue and tan on the interior. Yeah.
It sounds like we had very similar vehicles because I drove the Acura MDX A-Spec. Now I drove
the new MDX is nice.
Because I've driven it. I've driven the RDX, the MDX, but this is entirely redesigned. And I got to say, I always thought the previous, you know, MDX was nice. It was, you know, it was a nice car. Didn't, you know, really like go, whoa, the new body style. They lengthened the nose. They did a lot of belt, you know, to the belt line and things like that. But the nose and the grill, everything on this new one really, really worked. And it's an all-wheel drive, 3.5 liter V6. And again, like you said, the luxury is really there because the interior had had a red leather interior. The outside was again on this one was a gray. I think they call it like liquid titanium or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
And then had the same color wheels, black accents, and then on the interior it had red leather with an Alcantara center, which, you know, made it really comfortable. It had, I was talking to Charlotte driving over, and we were talking about how the interior is almost a waterfall effect because it started with the leather, then it went to like a metallicized metal treatment, and then almost like a carbon fiber, and then back down to leather. But it not only was different materials, but it was different layers. Really nice. One of the things I got to hand it, Matt, you and I have driven so many press cars over the years, you probably more than me. And one of the best things that they did was this car comes launched with Amazon Alexa installed.
Okay.
And there she goes in the background. What do I need? and you can ask it to give you, you know, hey, route me to here. What's the temperature? How far before I get to my destination? Anything like that. But they actually put it into play. And what I have here are these plastic cards that had all of the new features they wanted to make sure that I knew about. And they have little dots on the back, sticky dots. And it says, like, wireless charging and wireless CarPlay, Android audio. And it says, ask the A word. I'm not going to say it because she'll start talking. Tell me about wireless smartphone integration on the new MDX. And it would go into this presentation and tell you all about it. And the even the sound system, which I have got to say, we've driven some incredibly high-end vehicles. And this one is pretty impressive. They call it the ELS Studio 3D Premium Audio. Now, what they did is when you ask Alexa, they had put in a USB in where you would normally put your phone, plug it in, and they had sample audio so that it showed off their system. But I even tried it just through my iPhone, and the sound system's premium. They have speakers in the headliner. They have it has, I think, 17 speakers. Let me look here if it says. It does not say, but it's amazing. It really is a well-defined. One of the things for this size of a SUV that I thought was really interesting was their multifunction second row seat. How many times have we gotten in one of these mid-size SUVs? You want to put somebody in the back seat, and to get them in that third row back there is almost an impossibility.
Yeah.
They have a center section that can be removed. So if you're going to be using that last row, you can have like two buckets and then go back.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was pretty nice. It was kind of cool. Now this vehicle, as I had it, was $58,825.
Okay.
And it was like most of the press cars, very fully optioned, but it was really nice to drive out on the road. There are some cars that we drive and it's like, it takes a little while to get used to. I jumped right in this and felt like it was really, you know, comfortable. Like you said, a couple little things that are more or less getting used to. It has a touchpad for a lot of the controls.
Yeah.
And as you know, if you don't drive a car with a touchpad, it takes a little while to get used to that. But the one thing that I did absolutely loved was the wireless charging and phone integration.
Yeah.
Threw my iPhone down on the center console, it automatically kicked into CarPlay, and I heard my phone go bing, and it started charging. Never have to mess around with the cord, nothing like that. I love that.
Wireless CarPlay, when it's done correctly, it's really, I noticed it first in BMW and Audi, and then it really works well. That sound system you were talking about, there's three levels. There's a 9-speaker, a 12, and a 16-speaker.
This had the 16-speaker.
And the price ranges are from about $47,000 up into the low 60s or the mid 60s. But the three trim packages, you know, depending on front wheel drive or all wheel drive, starts at 46,000 and change. So about 47,000 to, it's basically in line with that Genesis as well.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest difference between these is I find the MDX, the interior styling and its performance to be sportier. The Genesis at high speeds, the suspension was a little floaty, especially on the way home from Vegas. It was really windy. And
yes,
I noticed
it was
a little bit floaty. Now, if I had put it in the sport mode, it felt like the suspension may change. It may tighten up, but it also kicks the RPMs up and stuff. So you don't want to drive it that way, because I was trying to get some decent gas mileage as well, which I got about 19, which isn't that bad for the big engine and the all-wheel drive, but yeah.
Now, let me ask both you a key question. What time did you leave Vegas on Sunday?
Well, there was no good time to leave Vegas. So we left at the end of the day because we had to pack up our stuff at the convention center.
4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, what?
4:30. We left 4:30.
And how was your traffic going back?
It had moments. There was definitely traffic. It took, which normally took, on the way out, it took 4 hours and 15 minutes door to door, like from my place.
Yeah, that's about what it was.
Yeah, it's about 4:15. And it took 5 hours. It's an extra 45 minutes.
We got up early. I didn't want to, but forced ourselves to get up early, kind of did the roll out of bed, water on the face to get going. Hit the road at 9 a.m. And as we got a little farther, it just more and more traffic chasing us. And for those of you who don't know, the Vegas to L.A. drive is notoriously horrible. It can sometimes, on a holiday weekend, no exaggeration, be a traffic jam from Vegas to L.A. where you never go over 13, 14 miles an hour. And in this case, it was pretty smooth sailing with one exception, Matt. Coming out of the Prim Valley there, up the big hill, at the top of the hill there was a fire, and they had closed down the freeway for about 15 minutes. And we were like, no, you know, because if it got crazy, then we're, you know, because there's no place to go. But it was pretty good. I do want to say one other thing about our trip. While we were there, there was this stuff up in the skybox. It was called Bravago. And I tried it in every flavor, and it was excellent. I'm just going to give you some props, because I am not a big drinker of the hard seltzers. And one of the reasons is because they call them lemon or they call them lime or cucumber watermelon or whatever. And they're just such a little hint. It's just like drinking carbonated alcohol water, you know?
Yeah.
Like Zima or something. And and for those of you who don't know Zima, just Google it. And but yours, I really did enjoy them. And that little bit more of a wallop of flavor really made a difference. And that is quite literally, you know me, I always drink cocktails. That is all I drank the entire time I was there.
I appreciate it. I'm glad everybody seemed to really like it. And you're right. When we tried the competitors, it was like liquid cardboard. It was just a little flat on flavor. So we came up through a lot of trial and error. We came up with a formula that we really liked, and the secret sauce in it is monk fruit. Most people sweeten with stevia or erythritol, but it's not really digestible. It gives you a bloated feeling. So we used all natural monk fruit. It's a zero calorie sweetener from a fruit that you can digest. And we wanted to punch up all the flavors just a little bit. But that being said, for the reasons why a lot of people drink hard seltzers, low calorie, 100, 110, 120 calories, low sugar, 2 grams of sugar, 3-4 grams of carbs, gluten-free, all natural. And they're, as you found out, they're pretty easy to drink. You realize these, you can be 3 or 4 into it and go, these are fine. And my biggest thing was I drank 4 of them on Saturday because we didn't have any place to go except Barrett Jackson. And I was waiting for like the headache or something to kick in. Nothing. And then that night and the next morning, I felt fine. And I think one of the reasons really why is when you get into some of the fancy cocktails, they have a lot of sugar in them, margaritas or things that are spiked with fruits. And that's what often gives you the headache. So I felt great. And you're not really a beer drinker. I am a beer drinker. So an alternative to beer that you may enjoy. But for me, I didn't get that bloated, full feeling. I didn't drink one of these things and go, oh, man, I just feel terrible, like bloated.
When I saw you on Saturday, at the show, I said, hey, Matt, I drank those all day. And I went back and just like you said, I thought, I'm going to have a headache tomorrow. I got up in the morning. I didn't have big bags under my eyes. I didn't have anything. I was good. And no, they were really good. And the I am going to have to send you a bill for the going Mercedes that I bought, though, while I was under the influence of.
Yeah. Okay. So, sure. It's a marketing expense for me. It's all right. I'll write it.
Good. Good. I'm glad you're agreeing with that. So, but no.
Yeah.
So, it's all good. But anyways, We had a great time in Vegas. We're going to have to see what Houston is like later this year. And really interested to see what Monterey is going to be like this year. Because, holy Moses, the way the prices were there, I can't imagine what they're going to be in Monterey. Like at RM, Sotheby's, and things like that. And
it's going to be a great event. But like you said, Barrett Jackson, Houston – is their first time in Texas. It's going to be mid-September, and it's their first Texas event. And they say it's going to be bigger than Las Vegas. So
Houston is a huge automotive culture, let alone Texas. It's going to be phenomenal.
I hope it's not 118 degrees.
And don't say that because you know Houston. They've been having all kinds of problems. Let's hope there's no tornadoes or floods or, you know.
Or something, right? Yeah. Just a good, clean weekend.
Yep.
All right, guys, let's wrap it up, right? So check us out at shiftandsteer.com. We always appreciate that and all the nice reviews and ratings. You can follow me at Moderator. And if you like, I won't beat this to death, you can follow Drink Bravago.
Oh, my gosh. Now we're going to have to start charging you, man. So, hey, hey, everybody, you noticed Aaron wasn't here. He's out overlanding with his family, so we give him the day off. What the hell, you know? Because we weren't around on Friday, we figured, you know, what are we going to do? Hey, everybody, thanks for, following the show. We appreciate that. Make sure you like our social media, including mine, which is Bradley_Fanshaw, and you'll find everything that we're doing there. So thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.